Trae Young's been traded. Tom Haberstroh and I are bringing out every angle of the Trae Young deal and a whole lot else going on around the NBA. That's all coming up right now. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. We're live today. Tom Haberstroh joining me. Tom, how are you?
Couldn't be better, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. We have a trade. A trade actually happened in the NBA early January. We got Trae Young was traded to the Washington Wizards by the Atlanta Hawks. We have CJ McCollum and Corey Kispert going to Atlanta for Trae Young. Tom, I mean, I think for my first thought here is the poor value of Trae Young. The fact that this is something I've harped on for years now, they could have traded him in 03 when ownership gave the green light then. 2024, Magic had interest, Spurs have interest, it's rock bottom now. But on CC Lay, the new Hawks general manager, getting this at this point, is there any reason for Hawks fans to be feeling good about this in this minute? And also, what was your first initial thought once this trade did come down from the Atlanta perspective?
Yeah, I got to tell you, Kevin, when this trade came through on last night, so this is Wednesday night, I'm prepping for the Blazers Houston Rockets game, and it comes through. And my first thought was, this is so impossibly, unbelievably boring of a trade, Kevin. Unbelievable. I tried to come up with a take, like a strong take about the Hawks and the Wizards, and I was like, this is so unbelievably boring that we had a Trae Young was an all-star last year. An all-star. Three out of the last 4 years, he was an all-star. And he was coming off a season in which he's averaging, 25 and 10, leading the league in assists. Like, three out of the last 4 years, he's been averaging 25 and 10. And this is what they got for him? Like, you talk about, like, the all-time most boring trade returns on a reigning all-star. Trae Young, in his prime, Kevin, in his prime, he got two solid bench guys, and CJ McCollum and Corey Kispert. And I just was trying.
Tom, you call it his prime. Is it actually his prime anymore, though? I mean, is it actually the prime of Trae Young at this point? He's has an upcoming contract extension that's he's going to want to get paid for Atlanta or now for Washington. He's in a situation where we've seen signs of physical decline, of not quite this peak burst that he had in the 21-22 seasons. I think Trae is still a very good basketball player, better than he's been this year when it's been really rock bottom for him. But for the Atlanta side of things, like, Tom, they're trying to win games right now. They've been better without Trae Young on the floor this season. They're 2-8 in games where Trae Young has played. They're 15-3 without him. Their offense has been not as good as it is with Trae, but their defense is just worlds better without Trae Young. A 112.7 defensive rating to a 129 defensive rating with Trae. The Hawks are trying to win. I think it's past the prime of Trae in Atlanta.
Well, I know this is kind of the setup is that you had the Atlanta Hawks front office here with an opportunity to get a lot more this summer. But then, hey, injuries happen. His knee starts barking, strained MCL. And then he's got this injury that has continued to linger. And so now you got to trade him for 40 cents on the dollar. You get CJ McCollum, 34 years old. He was playing too good for the Washington Wizards. And you get Corey Kispert, who's, you know, a good version or a bigger version of Luke Kennard. You don't even need Corey Kispert. He's just depth. I love Shams Charania, his report and his story for ESPN. It's like, he's more wing depth. He's depth for more wing depth on the Atlanta Hawks side. It's like, this trade is so mind-bogglingly just boring and inconsequential from a basketball perspective. Like, a basketball perspective, this trade, like, I'm trying to think of another star player. And Grant, you're right. Like, he is not the same player that he was a few years ago, especially not the one that led them over the Knicks in the playoffs a few years ago. But what we're talking about is the Washington Wizards had to spin this by saying they searched to anchor their young talent in the next step of the team's development. This is the tweet from Shams Charania. They just got an all-star, a guy who was averaging 25 and 10, and the best they could spin this was, we got a guy who can take the next step in the team's development. If I'm the Washington Wizards, I'm saying, we got one of the best playmakers in the NBA, but they can't say that because Kevin, the top eight protected pick, the top eight protected pick for the Wizards, they can't win with Trae Young. So they got to say it. They got to spin it that Trae Young is a guy that makes a lot of money and is going to help us because of that defense you talked about, is that he's a step slower than he was and he's a buck 30 pounds soaking wet. That Trae Young at this 30, stage of it, he's tiny, man. Like you see him now out there, he's so small. So I just, when you look at the way that they defended with Trae Young out there, and you think about the fact that if it weren't for the Utah Jazz, the Washington Wizards would be the worst defense in NBA history, giving up 122 points every 100. CJ McCollum and Corey Kispert, they're not anywhere near all world defenders. In fact, you know, they're part of that, the reason why they're so bad defensively. But to me, this trade, Kevin, is all about the CBA. You could talk yourself into the whole Trae Young as a playmaker. They don't have any playmakers on the team. But are we even sure that he's going to play really much for this team? Like, are we sure? Like, Dan Devine in our podcast this week for The Big Number, he pointed out that this could be very much a Brandon Ingram situation with the Washington Wizards, where the reason why they acquire him is not to play him right now, is to nurse that injury and to make sure that that top eight protected pick that would go to the New York Knicks, if it falls outside the top eight, it becomes locked in. Because if they're top four in the draft lottery, it locks in. That's these are the stakes, Kevin, right? People need to understand how this draft lottery works, that if the Wizards finish with the bottom four record in the NBA, then they will lock in that top eight protected. And you've had draft analysts every other day here.
Is eighth. That's why like with the first pick, the lowest it can go is fifth. With the fourth pick, the lowest it can go is eighth. That's why.
Right.
Just make it clear for people. Whereas if it's fifth, you know, there's a chance you don't land in the top four, which means, well, you could definitely, you know, land lower than that. Unlikely, but it could happen.
Unlikely, but in order to not lose any sleep over, I mean, we just saw Cooper Flagg go number one to the Dallas Mavericks, right? So like crazy things happen on draft lottery night. And so you've had every other day here on this show a draft analyst that talks about how stacked this draft is. So for the Washington Wizards, the number one thing is we got to find a guy who we can sell to our fan base that, hey, if everything breaks right, he's going to help our development, whatever that means, of our young pieces. When we just saw the Atlanta Hawks, who have a bunch of young pieces, get rid of this guy for no picks. Like they traded this guy for salary flotsam, essentially, because they were like, he can't defend at an NBA level anymore. He's banged up. And that $49 million option for us, that's tough looking down the road. And we didn't want to sign him to a contract extension. But for the Washington Wizards, man, Trae Young, like they were waiting for a guy like Trae Young to drop from the heavens and land in their lap. Because,
for
man,
the tank, Tom. For the tank.
For the tank. They're sitting there. They're sitting there like, oh, man. CJ might be too good for us right now, Kev. CJ's balling out. He's averaging 20 points a game.
Kispert's a pretty solid player as well. I mean, and for Atlanta, I mean, I think that's where it's like you're getting Corey Kispert and CJ McCollum, and you're like, that's it for our face of our franchise. And that's where the emotional side of the deal is here for the Atlanta Hawks fans, because Trae, you think about his best moments. I think his best moment, when I'm thinking about Trae in a Hawks jersey, it's against the Knicks, his first playoff appearance. He hits the game winner, and he shushes at the MSG crowd. And, you know, you get Spike Lee with the COVID mask on, sitting courtside, all the Knicks fans looking mad. That's where the Trae Young villain arc really started with Ice Trae. And then, of course, he closes that series, and he hits a dagger to finish the game after they're up big against the Knicks in a closeout game, and he bows to the crowd at Madison Square Garden. I mean, Trae, for a generation of Hawks fans, I had David Lee, draft analyst, who grew up in Atlanta and is a Hawks analyst and fan as well, talking about this on the show earlier this week before this really became very clear he was going to Washington. And for Hawks fans, he was their face of the franchise, right? And I think from an emotional standpoint, I understand being extremely, extremely disappointed by this return. But Tom, you have to think logically about this too. And I think for Atlanta, they get trade flexibility with CJ McCollum And I like the Corey Kispert fit in a Quinn Snyder offense. He's not just a 40% catch and shoot 3-point guy for that team. He's not just a shooter. He is somebody who shoots 57% on drives when attacking off of a closeout. He's very good at pump faking, getting into the defense, finishing with either hand. He can be used in different sets on offense. He can pass within the flow of the offense as well. He doesn't really turn the ball over. I think Kispert is going to impress Hawks fans, especially in this Snyder offense. And then McCollum, that's where it's really interesting because CJ's 34 years old. He's older. He has a $31 million expiring salary. So the Hawks, in theory, maybe CJ is part of your playmaking because you still need guys who can create. However, I can also see a scenario, Tom, where CJ McCollum ends up being a guy they try to flip right away. CJ, they could trade his $30.7 million salary for up to roughly $38.6 million in salary. So that includes names like Michael Porter Jr. or Trey Murphy, guys like that, where if they wanted to flip CJ alone plus assets, they could go out and add. So it's just, this deal gives them more financial flexibility. And that's where, like, I feel like I have almost two contrasting views. I think the Hawks got piss poor, horrible value for Trae Young with what he can be as a player. I think they should have traded him 2 or 3 years ago, and that past front office regime missed that opportunity. But I also think the new front office, led by Ansi Saleh, did a solid job giving the team some type of flexibility, considering the fact they're in a completely new situation now and the circumstances have changed, and it's about building around the best team that you have today. And Trae Young's value is incredibly low. And so I think they have flexibility with CJ, a solid rotation guy in Corey Kispert. And now the big question is, what do you do with all of it? Should they, the name everybody's talking about now is Anthony Davis. Should the Hawks go after Anthony Davis next? You're shaking your head already.
No, absolutely not. You have a fake trade here for Zachary Risache and Kristaps Porzingis. I'd rather have Kristaps Porzingis on his expiring deal and work out like a longer term deal at like in the 20s, right, for Kristaps Porzingis, then basically double down on Anthony Davis at this age, because he's going to want a contract extension off of his current deal if you acquire him. It's just the way that the NBA works now, that Anthony Davis, you're not just trading for AD, you're trading for him that age with his injury risk, and then he's going to want that contract extension. So it's throwing good money after bad if you trade for Anthony Davis. And for the Atlanta Hawks, you're trying to move off of Trae Young because you want to build around the young guys. And then you trade for a guy who's like 34, but going on 37 in Anthony Davis. We just saw this with the Dallas Mavericks. I have no idea why the Atlanta Hawks would move off of Trae Young and then bring in a guy who's way more injury riddled and way older and a different timeline than your young group. And I just don't see it from the Atlanta Hawks perspective, which is one of the reasons why I don't love this deal, is because if it's just a pretext to the AD deal for make a big splash for this front office, I hate that deal for Atlanta.
Yeah. I mean, I think with AD, he hasn't played 5 straight games yet for Dallas. There's no saying if that is ever going to change for the remainder of his career. He's always been injury prone, and he's on the wrong side of 30 at this point. But that would be a buy low. It would be a buy low if you're able to get him for, you know, a guy who looks like a potential bust in Risache, Kristaps Porzingis, who can play sometimes, and then has his POTS condition where he's in and out for multiple weeks, and you don't know when it's going to happen. It's like a terrible thing that he has. But ultimately, I think for the Hawks, I'd think about it if it's cheap for AD, but I'm not all the way locked in there. I'm more intrigued by the what do you flip CJ for? What do you flip the expiring KP salary for when it comes to like the Michael Porter Jr., Trey Murphy types of names out there that are in that $30 million salary range? That's my preferred route if I'm the Atlanta Hawks. But I do understand the appeal for them to make a move for AD because their defense needs help. It does need help. That's the biggest flaw on the team right now as they're building this thing out. But old AD, injury-prone AD, I'm not quite sure that's the actual answer for them. For people watching us live right now on YouTube, please subscribe to @YahooNBA if you have not done so already. Like this video as well. It does help us out. If you give us a like on the live stream, please do that. And I do want to talk, Tom, more about the Trae Young to the Hawks side of things here. Because, you know, we talked about it earlier. to the Wizards. Yes, Trae Young to the Wizards here. This is the ultimate buy low for them, right? Like, he's injured 10 games so far this year, career low numbers, extension coming up. And the numbers are bad right now, Tom, for Trae Young. If you look at his isolation scoring, his pick and roll scoring this season, obviously small samples with only 10 games, but he's shooting only 29 effective field goal out of ISOs, 39% out of pick and rolls. Last year, only 36% out of ISOs as well, well below his typical numbers, around 50% 2 years ago, 46% 3 years ago. Pick and roll numbers slightly down as well. With Trae Young, I just worry from the Wizard side of things. There's no doubt that he is a buy low. I just hope he doesn't hijack the offense with some of these possessions where it's 20 dribbles, where he's taking up the whole shot clock and then taking contested step back jumpers. We've seen this from him throughout his career, playing some clips on screen here. If you're watching on YouTube, a game against the Magic, middle of the fourth quarter, Hawks up two and nobody else gets a touch. It's just Trae ISO, dribble, dribble, dribble into a step back mid-range jumper, heavily contested. And there's been too much of that when the Hawks want to play with motion. Well, the Wizards want to get their young guys, Keyshawn George, Trae Johnson, Bub Carrington, Alex Carr, even guys like Will Riley, they want to get these guys developmental opportunities. So, Tom, I ask you this question. This is a buy low for the Wizards, but is it a mistake to trade for Trae Young?
All right. Well, this is where it becomes the Sistine Chapel of CBA trades, because Trae Young, with that $49 million cap charge next season, the player option he has for $49 million. I think that's what's most interesting about this trade for the Washington Wizards perspective, is not the on-court stuff. Like, Trae Young, for all you just said, like, about ball hogging and not getting his teammates involved, isn't that so ironic considering he's a guy who averages 10 assists a game? Like, the idea is you get a playmaker. You get a guy who's able to set up his teammates. The Atlanta Hawks were like, yeah, we want to get rid of that guy. Like, we want to let our young guys blossom. And Trae Young is hurting that development. So, yeah, Washington Wizards, you go get that guy and hopefully he can develop your young pieces. Like, this to me is more about the fact that the Washington Wizards had a problem on their hands. And Trae Young solves this problem, which is two words: salary floor. Next year, Corey Kispert was set to be the highest salaried player on the Washington Wizards books next year. $13.9 million, okay? It's insane. The Wizards' books are so tiny. They had $67 million charged to their books next year. And the salary floor, what they had to meet for in the CBA, there's rules that you have to get to $149 million next year, and they had $67 million on the books. Their top guy was Corey Kispert, because CJ McCollum's contract falls off, the Chris Middleton contract falls off, and the Marcus Smart contract that they ate because he was a buyout last year, that falls off the books as well. So you're looking at, how are we going to meet the salary floor? Well, there is a guy who's making about $50 million next year in a player option that, if he takes that, it solves a lot of that those issues. Or we can work out a contract extension for, what, 3-4 million years down the road, and then at like 25, maybe $100 million over those 4 years. And that would really help to get a guy like Trae Young, who, if you're able to bring him onto the floor, is kind of a secret taking option. Like, if maybe, he's a guy
maybe,
who's the
maybe Tom, he might like, but he could also get healthy and start putting up some numbers and helping you win games. But I think ultimately, like, that's where with Washington, whether they start winning this year or whether they keep losing games and they have a high pick, it's all about the future for them. All about the future. When you're talking about the salary floor, the numbers you're talking about for next season, the flexibility that the fact that gets him to the floor, but also the flexibility where if he isn't expiring next year, you could flip that guy. You could take it in a cap space. You could, it's a short-term deal. And I think, as Eric Weiss said in the live YouTube chat, I think he brings up a great point. I'm not sure Trae can afford to hijack anything. That's what Eric said in the comments. And I think he's 100% right about that when it comes to the Trae Young side of this. If you're Trae Young entering this Washington situation where they got a pretty like nice thing developing, it's not clear exactly what the Wizards are going to be, but Alex Carr is taking a huge leap this year on both ends of the floor. He's been great individually, defensively, especially as a switch defender, but he's developed offensively as well. Keyshawn George, Bob Carrington, and Trae Johnson, and all these guys that handle the ball, there's something coming along with the Wizards. And I think that's where, if you're Trae entering this situation, if he screws this all up and derails the development of these young guys in this situation, that's not good for him to get paid in Washington or paid literally anywhere else. And so Trey has to make sure he looks at the situation and says, what can I do to help this team with what the, where they are and what we could be in the coming couple years here? He can't screw this up. He can't afford to do it. This is a tryout for him, really, for every other team in the league if he wants to start winning soon. But ultimately for Trey, I think that's where he hasn't shown much of that adaptability over the years in Atlanta. And that's where, like, I hope maybe a change of scenery is what's good for him.
Right. In the same way that Michael Porter Jr. has remade his entire trade stock and profile in the league. And I think this is an opportunity for Trae Young to do it. You notice, like, in all of the in the talk from Shams Charania and the people who are reporting on this trade, the Wizards are not framing this as we just got one of the best point guards in the NBA. They're framing it as, I think it was Chris Haynes who had John Wall.
That would
Wall
be a lie, on, Tom. Tom, that would be a lie if they framed it that way. He is not one of the best point guards in the NBA.
Right, but he's going to want that contract. He's going to want to prove that he's one of those guys. And so for them to sell this...
Better not make the same Beal mistake. They better not do that.
Well, then when you look at this from that perspective of the Wizards have the leverage here, is that if he doesn't play nice, if he doesn't play well with these young guys, and he ends up being the ball hog that you're describing, or potentially that guy, then... he is not going to be getting that max, or that certainly not a max contract extension, but he's not going to get the big bag that he's hoping for. And certainly with the Washington Wizards, like, they have an opportunity here to lock in that top eight pick. They have an injured player coming in over the deal. And I think there's a reason why they're framing this, as John Wall put it. He's like, this is a trial run from the Wizards perspective. Usually when you get this kind of an all-star or a star big name coming over in a trade like this, immediately you start to hear contract extension. They're immediately working on a contract extension for a long-term deal, a long-term pact with this player. They're pumping the brakes on that. I don't know if you've noticed that. A lot of the talk out of the Wizards side is they're going to see, you know, how this goes. You know, they have not discussed long-term contract extensions. They're going to table that till this summer. And I think that's a big sign that, like, the Wizards have a lot of leverage here with Trae Young. If you don't play nice with these young players, and if you start hijacking the offense, we'll just move you, or you won't find a big bag at the end of this road. And so I think Trae Young has to really do a Michael Porter look in the mirror and say, like, the best thing I can do is to do all of those things that everybody wants me to do. The same thing with LeBron after the 2011 NBA Finals, where it's like, everyone wants me to be a post-up guy. Fine, I will do that. I have hit the bottom of the road here, and I got to rehabilitate my image around the NBA. In the same way that Trae Young, people are like, dude, learn how to play off the ball. Be more active defensively. Watch Steph Curry, how he plays off the ball. You could be that guy. You don't always have to have the ball in your hands in order to be successful on offense. And this is the opportunity for the Wizards to get that in Trae Young's head and have him rehabilitate his image around the league.
It's just too bad it didn't happen in Atlanta. It's too bad, because you think about the way that team has developed with Jalen Johnson becoming an absolute versatile star on the offensive end of the floor, and Nickeil Alexander-Walker, and adding these other guys that can play on ball and off ball. It was the situation for Trey to become that, and now he's going to be doing that on a team that wants to lose games and end up with a top pick. And for people watching us live, submit some questions that we'll answer for the mailbag later in the show. But we did get one from X over the weekend, earlier this week, from Huncho, and he asked, if you're Washington and have a top three pick, who would you think would be a good pair with Sarr and Young? And I think this touches on what you were talking about earlier, Tom, when it comes to the quality of this draft class. Any of the top three picks, Darren Peterson from Kansas, AJ DiBonsa from BYU, or Cam Boozer from Duke, are all perfect fits with Trae Young and Alex Sarr. All of them are, because with Darren Peterson, it's another ball handler in the backcourt that can thrive on ball and off ball. With AJ DiBonsa, it's a 6'9" creator at the wing position who brings the ability to play with the ball. He can cut, he can play off ball, he can be an on ball scorer, ISO guy. He's a pick and roll playmaker. Size in the front court next to Sarr is a 4 or a 3. And then with Cam Boozer, he's just a do it all winner through and through. He can space the floor with Sarr. He can play with two bigs, 5-out offense. He can screen and roll just like Sarr can. Ultimate versatility. All three of those guys fit. So to your point, Tom, That is why for the Washington Wizards, the future needs to be prioritized here, because any of those top three guys, even the fourth guy on a lot of boards, Caleb Wilson out of North Carolina, all of them are perfect fits with this cleaner slate that the Wizards have with their youth. And with Trae Young, that's where you introduce this variable where it's like, well, God, I hope he's able to fit in, not derail the development of these young guys, because they got something going with some quality young players on that roster. And if they add one of these top three guys as well, suddenly the Wizards are going to look like the bright future Wizards. That's what could happen if they end up with a top three in the draft pick this year.
And again, Trae Young, if he's hogging the ball and stuff, it's not going to go well, because guess who's going to be have the ear of the front office is that top guy that they draft in this upcoming draft, right? So it is a really dicey situation for Trae Young in the sense that if he wants to be the guy who's got the ball in his hands the entire time, it's not going to really work with a Darren Peterson or A.J. DeBonta. Like, when you look at what they want, the Wizards guys, to be running at the controls. And that this is a perfect draft to be in the top eight or the top four because of all those wings you described. All those guys are great fits, which is imperative that the Wizards can't be the Wizards of old and being like a 30 to 40 win team. They got to bottom out, which is why this Trae Young trade is so perversely interesting, is that the best thing might be for them to be as bad as possible the rest of the year to make sure that Darren Peterson and Caleb Wilson and A.J. DeBonta and Cam Boozer are on their team.
Getting one of them would be absolutely huge. If you've not liked the video on YouTube, please do so, as well as subscribing to Yahoo NBA, since we're launching my podcast will air on video on there, your pod, the Big Number, the Dunker Spot as well, all on at Yahoo NBA over on YouTube. And we'll be right back after this break. Tom, the other side of it for the Wizards here is, like, it's disappointing in some ways that their big mistake in recent years was letting go of Danny Avdija, who has turned into an absolute star for your Portland Trailblazers. He had 41 points on Wednesday night. Dude, like, how many times does this have to happen? Danny Avdija looks like an absolute star. What did you see from Denny on Wednesday, Tom?
They couldn't guard him. This Houston Rockets team could not guard him. And after Tari Eason was talking to the reporters, and he's like, zebras, that's why couldn't guard him.
Ridiculous.
Dude, this guy was barreling down the lane. No one could stay in front of him. He had three and ones in the final 4 minutes of the game. How often does that happen where a guy is able to get into the teeth of the defense and finish through contact and get those calls? By the way, 41 points for a guy going against Steven. He just decked Steven Adams on that clip going into the paint. Steven Adams! Steven Adams in the front row here. He's so strong. LeBron James talked about it with Steve Nash on Mind the Game, about how he is the most physical driver in the game right now. Like, he is a guy that if you get in front of him, he is going to go into you and draw contact and finish through that physicality in ways that we rarely see in the NBA. He loves the physical contact. This guy's playing huge minutes, being such a creator for them. He's top three in the NBA in scoring plus assist points. He's a top three creator in the NBA right now, Kevin. And this season we were going in on the broadcast being like, I think he can be an all-star. I think we should lead the charge and talk about his all-star candidacy. Kevin, I think we shot it too low. I think all NBA is very much in the taking right now for Danny Avdija. You talk about impact. Danny Avdija is one of three players who has 25-5-5 for 16 times since he took over point guard duties. He's averaging 26 points, 7 rebounds, 7 assists a game. His impact on court, off court is one of the best in the NBA. And he's a guy who's a 42% shooter on catch and shoot threes. Like, he has no offensive weakness right now in his game. And he's played in every single Blazers contest of the season. And in a league that you're seeing star players miss more games than ever, I don't see how you look at Danny Avdija right now, Kevin, and say he isn't a top 15 player when you consider the level of production and the volume of production. Danny Avdija being an all-star is the floor right now. I think all NBA is the conversation we should be having.
I think you're 100% right, Tom. I mean, I wish I could disagree with you there on Danny being in the all-NBA conversation as of now. Like, we'll see how the season closes. But Denny was at his best to close last year as well. And he is seemingly trending up in some ways in the middle of this year as well for Portland. It's not like he's getting worse. He's getting better at this point. I think for Wizards fans, seeing Denny Avdia do this with the Blazers, this was the dream when he was drafted. This was the dream. Is Denny turning into this 6'7", 6'8", versatile shot creator, driver, versatile defender as well? This was who he looked like playing overseas. And it just took forever to get there. It took six. This is year six for him, year two with Blazers. But it's like development is not always linear, Tom. It's just not. Yeah. Like this, Denny Avdia is a great reminder of that, where sometimes it's a long and winding road for these players to turn into what they will inevitably be at their peak. And Denny Avdia, this was the vision for him. I remember, like, there's this clip of Mike Schmitz, formerly of Draft Express, who now is an assistant with the Blazers, where on that draft night, he called Denny the steal of the draft. And so what did the Blazers do? Basically, like, months after hiring Mike Schmitz, they go and trade for Denny Avdia. And here we are with him turning into this guy that does indeed look like the steal, or at least one of the steals of his year in the NBA draft. It's really remarkable from that 2020 draft class it was, right? What year was Denny? Denny was 2019, right?
Kev, let me just tell you something real quick about Denny Avdia.
2020 was Denny's year.
Kev. He's making $11 million in 27-28
season. That's insane. That's
like the Wizards.
That's incredible.
The Wizards got him on an amazing contract. Amazing deal. Descending contract. It's a descending contract.
Oh my God.
He's most expensive right now, and then he gets cheaper, quote unquote. Wow. As we progress to 27-28, he's about $11.5 million contract. Crazy. And he's playing at an all NBA.
Those paychecks getting smaller. 14.4 million this year. He was 15.6 million last year. He was making more money last year.
and you never, like, in post game interviews, he's very the gratitude. He got everyone a refrigerator for Christmas. Like, everyone during the holidays were like, what are we all getting? It's a very funny thing. I don't know the backstory on it. I should probably know this, but he got everyone gifts. And after games in the locker room, they're giving him MVP chants, and he's just like expressing all this gratitude to the fans. And if I'm him, I'm like, man, I should be paid like an MVP out there. And I'm like a little, not bitter about this, but you could see some players in the NBA might be just like, man, this is great, but it feels like I'm way outperforming expectations here, and I should get paid for this. But he's not expressing any of that. He's just expressing a lot of gratitude. After these big games, he says, thank you to the teammates. They play so hard. I love playing for this team. He is like the poster child of what you want as a leader, saying all the right things. And like the production is insane. He's leading the league in drive assists, kickouts. Like, it's not getting to, people say he's a free throw foul merchant. He's getting downhill and sending the ball to his teammates. More drive assists than any player in the NBA, and it's by a mile. He has over 100 drive assists this season, and no other player has more than 70. So you want to talk about a selfless guy willing to put his body on the line and kick out to shooters. And it's, look, I love Tamani Kamara. I love Caleb Love. I love Ryan Rupert. But he's kicking out to those shooters, and just imagine if it's Damian Lillard on the receiving end of those three of those kickouts, right? He's leading the league in three-point assists right now with a shooting core that we all know is not the best in the league. So think about when he's like, imagine if he had, you know, Damian Lillard to kick out to on those downhill drives. Everything on this Blazers team changes, because then you can't crowd the paint on Denny Avdia drives, and you certainly can't not send bodies to him if you're got Damian Lillard or really plus shooters around him. So like this Blazers team with Denny Avdia, the ability to put teams in a blender is so huge. And once he got that point guard duties, once Drew Holiday got hurt, everything changed. Everything, the trajectory of this team. And I think like all NBA is in play right now. We're about 40 games into the season. If he keeps this up, and the way that, you know, health around the league, it's really hard to get guys who play every single night. I think Denny has an amazing case.
He does have an amazing case. And I think the foul grifting stuff is just absurd with him. Nobody can stay in front of him right now. Nobody can. Another player that nobody can ever seem to stay in front of is Giannis Antetokounmpo. Great article, great reporting from Sam Amick over at The Athletic. He had a quote from Giannis. He had like a walk and talk to the bus for 10, 12 minutes talking with Giannis. And Giannis had a quote that's gone viral this morning where he said, "There will never be a chance and there will never be a moment that I will come out and say I want to trade. That's not in my nature." Okay? And that's what Amick reported, saying that Giannis was pausing between those last few words for emphasis. Tom, I've been pretty consistent in saying that my belief is that Giannis doesn't want to be the one who breaks this up, that he wants the Bucks to be the one to end the relationship. I still continue to feel that way after reading the whole article, and I feel this way after reading this quote as well. What was your initial reaction to Amick's reporting and Giannis's comments to him?
He says, "I'm not going to be the one to come out and say that, but what about to your agent and have your agent say it for you? This is what agents do. This is how agents make their money, is that they do this for you so you don't have to be the bad guy publicly." And from all, you know, from all reporting that we can see, is that that is how the New York Knicks stuff started popping up in the, over the summer, is that Giannis wasn't putting it out there publicly, but in private channels, he can make his voice heard through his agent, have the agent be the bad guy. And so Giannis, I love it. You know, it's like in this interview, and like you said, great reporting here from Sam Amick, and the fact that we actually get these one-on-one interviews that we used to get all the time. The access is so rare in these days to get these guys one-on-one and have like a very candid conversation. Giannis was like, "Yeah, I'm here right now." And Sam Amick pressed him, was like, "Yeah, but what about in like a month, the trade deadline's February 5th. And he's like, "Well, you know, things can change." And he talked about his marriage and like having a significant other. Like, yeah, that was Tom, wild. Did you hear that part?
That quote to me, that is like the key quote in the whole story. Because Sam's asking him about, you know, if he's already made his decision. And Giannis said, as of today, you know, and he says like, "You know how it is with your wife. You always have to say as of today." And then Sam followed up. He said, quote, "I hear you, but that's the stuff where fans are then going to say, oh, he's leaving it out." And then this is, you know, Giannis goes on. And he's like, "Oh, I'm just focused on basketball. He doesn't care what people think about him." And then he says, quote, "It's the same thing with my wife. Until today, my wife is great. Tomorrow, she might wake up and be like, I don't want this. I fell out of love. Until today, me and John Horst have a good relationship. Tomorrow, Horst might think there's something else out there and he might have to do whatever he has to do." And it's that last line. Horst might think there's something else out there and he might have to do whatever else that he has to do, right? And so Sam responds to that. He's like, "But you're planning on being here through the end of the season, right?" And then Giannis said, "My plan is to be here for the rest of my career if they don't want me, ... And then Sam said, "Okay, but you're the one in charge. Let's be real." And Giannis says, "I'm not the one in charge. I am an employee." And Giannis isn't wrong about that. He's right. Like, the Bucks could decide, "We will trade you because we don't see a path forward with you." But ultimately, Sam is also right in that Giannis has some say here. And ultimately, that's, to your point, Tom, the conversations that he's having with his agent, with what he wants for his future. And then the agent is delivering that to the Bucks. But also the Bucks side of the things here, they could decide, yeah, we do think it's best for us to go get a haul for our face of the franchise and Giannis. But ultimately, I think this goes back to what I said. This is Giannis avoiding accountability. I wrote it in December at the time this stuff first started breaking, that deep down inside, I think he wants the freedom to leave without the guilt of being the one who's saying goodbye to the Bucks. I think he's worried about Bucks fans burning his jerseys. That's not going to happen. I think it's an irrational fear. He wants to be looking like the good guy in this whole situation. But in reality, Tom, he is part of it. And he is part of the reason why these conversations are happening. I just think he's avoiding all of this accountability. I would rather he be full on honest about the situation rather than taking this type of approach. But ultimately, he's going to do what he's going to do, you know, whatever. It's his decision. But I don't think that this is going to be going away anytime soon here after this conversation. I think it's a continuation of everything that's been happening the past month, where it's Giannis putting it on his agent and on the Bucks, as the people making this decision, even though it does involve him and it is partially his decision. But ultimately, Tom, like, the February 5th deadline is very soon. As Giannis said in that story, the Bucks have won 4 out of 6. Do you see any reason that the Bucks would break up this marriage before the February 5th deadline?
I mean, if the spiral continues, I mean, right now they're outside of the play-in. They're out of the play-in right now. They're in the Eastern Conference. They're out of the play-in. So if they're continuing to be, what, like 2-3 games out of the play-in right now, I think they're a game out of the Chicago Bulls for the 10th slot there. But I continue to believe that if he has any sort of, if he's sidelined for a week or two and they fall out of the play-in picture in the next month, I think that's what he's alluding to. I think that's what he's alluding to, is that the Milwaukee Bucks have, they went all in for Damian Lillard, and then you thought they went all in, and then they waived Damian Lillard and they went all in with Miles Turner and Kyle Kuzma, and you're like, oh, they're all in now. But every time you think they go all in, they come up with another way to just get just like 30% better future. But at some point, you got to look at them in the mirror and say, we're 16-21. And that's with Giannis playing a whole bunch of those games. Like, what are we doing here? Like, what is the future here? What is the best case scenario going forward? And that's why I think Giannis is leaving the door open for Horst and the front office to be the one to make the move. And I wonder if part of Giannis's like mentality here is like, never be the one to demand the trade, but be the one that forces them to move away and just say, we're actually going to commit and making the rebuild move, because right now they're 5 games under .500 and outside of the play-in. And if that is the case come February, I think Milwaukee makes the move.
I mean, ultimately, Tom, there is incentive for the Bucks. They currently have the 11th best lottery odds. They are 3.5 games back from the Brooklyn Nets for the 5th best lottery odds. And so that comes with currently a 11.7% chance of moving up into the top four, with the 11th best odds tied with Memphis right now, and with Brooklyn a 42% chance of moving into the top four for one of these potential franchise changing prospects. And so whether or not Giannis is there, that ultimately could be the prize for Milwaukee in this year's draft class, for a team without so many future picks, without control of their future assets. This year they do have their pick. And so with the Milwaukee Bucks, this is an opportunity to move up in the draft this year and retain that. I should say, let me clarify. Atlanta has the swap between New Orleans and the Bucks. So in theory, Atlanta could benefit from that if Milwaukee finished ahead of New Orleans. But I should say that they get the New Orleans pick or their own pick if you're the Bucks. So in that case, maybe in theory, the Pelicans end up number one, the Hawks get that pick, the Bucks end up number three, and the Bucks get that third pick. So that's a scenario where they do have at least the swap in that scenario. We'll be right back. Let's move on to a team in the Western Conference right now playing without their star player. Nikola Jokic has missed the last 5 games. The Nuggets are 3-2 in these games, Tom. They are coming off an overtime win against the Sixers, a win against Boston on Wednesday. The Celtics had won 4 straight games. They've been very hot. Peyton Watson with 30 points, Jamal Murray with 22, 17-8. I said before, at the time of this injury, that maybe this could be a blessing in disguise for Denver to see more from the rest of their roster. That's the way I'm feeling right now, Tom, with watching Denver. What are you seeing from the Nuggets without Jokic?
Oh, man, this is so good to see, considering the on-off splits for Nikola Jokic have been legendarily bad for the Denver Nuggets over the years, that they just cannot tread water without him when he's off the floor. And God forbid he gets injured like he is now for a month, and we get to see, like, man, they have never been good with him off the floor. Just kind of a something that we always had said with Joel Embiid is like, when he's off the floor, the Sixers can't do anything. But here you have Jamal Murray continuing this all-star bid, first-time all-star potentially here, and he's been every bit as good as we wanted him to be. 17 assists! Guy's a great playmaker, and we see this all the time in the league, is like, when one guy leaves, Jokic, and how he's the hub of the offense, that there is just a hub of the offense in waiting. And Jamal Murray has been stepping up in a huge way. And all the rest of the guys, like Peyton Watson, his performance against the Celtics in this one was huge. And I got to say, that clip of him locked in on Jokic and the coaching Jokic on the sideline, it's one of my favorite clips of the year. You saw this, right? When Peyton Watson was just listening to Jokic on the sideline mm-hmm. and just like hanging on every word. If you're the Nuggets, so Nuggets fans, it's just, I don't know. Yeah, this is what you love to see, is that these role players are stepping up in the biggest moment of the season with Jokic out. And it just feels like Jokic is being the best assistant coach possible in coaching these guys up, and they lock in on everything that he says. So I just think this is great for Nuggets fans that for the longest time were terrified of what happens if Jokic gets hurt. And here we have them having way more production than we thought.
Well, I thought before the season that one of the reasons why they'd have the best on-offs without Jokic was because of Jonas Valanciunas. The fact they're doing this also without Valanciunas is even more impressive in my eyes. Having to play with Holmes and Najee at the five spot more often. And I mean, I think Peyton Watson, that 30-point game he had against Boston, it's a lot of spot-up threes, but he's a guy we've seen him develop off the dribble as well. And even just developing the spot-up jumper is a great development for the Nuggets as well, considering what he was when he was coming out of UCLA. And a guy like Jalen Pickett, 29 points against the Sixers. Did you see this, Tom? What Pickett did against Philadelphia? He looked like Tyrese Halliburton out there, the way he was hitting three-pointers off the dribble on a switch against Joel Embiid, pulling him out of the paint on switches. Pickett was unbelievable. And this is a guy out of Penn State. He played with his back to the basket on drives to the rim from the three-point line. He'd turn his back like a weird post player. The three-pointer has come along for him. It started last year. This year as well, he's shooting around 40%, but he was attacking Embiid in this game on these switches, bringing him out, dancing with him on the perimeter, getting into a step-back jumper. I'm not exaggerating when I say he looked like a short Halliburton. There's just this herky-jerky, weird-looking style where he creates his shots off the dribble. I'm telling you, man, like Pickett has shown flashes in the past for Denver in real short spurts. He did it again with a big extended opportunity against Philly. He's done it multiple times this year. This is a blessing in disguise for the Nuggets to get these guys extended opportunities as long as Jokic is able to return and stay healthy once he's back in February at some point. This could be a good thing for Denver, Tom, to see these guys get these reps.
100%. It's a big reason why Greg Popovich was such a big advocate of getting bench guys big minutes in the regular season to have them comfortable in those star roles when called upon in the postseason when they need them. And this is one of those things that Tom Thibodeau, for example, is not. He's on the opposite end of that spectrum. And you
Michael
see
Malone,
a lot of these guys.
Denver's former coach.
Bingo.
He didn't want to play Christian Brown until Calvin Booth traded Bones Highland, forcing him to play Christian Brown for minutes. And that ended up being beneficial in their run to the finals.
We wouldn't know how good Jalen Pickett is. And look, Peyton Watson has scored 20 plus in five straight games. He hadn't done it in consecutive games all season. And now he's doing it every single night out there. And it's just been lurking. And that's what I love sometimes about basketball, is because it's a team sport, because there's only five guys on the floor at any time. It's not like in baseball where if you're the eighth guy in the batting order, you're going to get your opportunities. It's not like the NFL or the football where if you're a really good cornerback, you have an opportunity of one of 22 guys to have minutes every time out on the field. It's not the same thing with basketball. And so when you do have these moments where guys like Jalen Pickett and Peyton Watson and Zeke Nnaji have the opportunity to step up, it's really exciting. It's fun to see. And Denver, under the new coaching staff with Adelman, this is the vision, is that they have a lot more depth pieces than you expected. And Nikola Jokic being out for a considerable amount of time, that is not a death knell for your season. And so this is best case scenario for the Nuggets right now.
The Detroit Pistons keep on winning, Tom. They've won three straight here. They beat the Cavaliers. They just destroyed, dismantled, embarrassed the Knicks 121-90 earlier in the week. And then they beat the Bulls without any of their guys. Kay didn't play. A bunch of their starters didn't play. And the Bulls have the just the most disgusting interior defense. Isaiah Stewart got there at absolute will. They offer no resistance. It's disgusting. It's tough to watch that Bulls team. But the Pistons, you did a podcast this week on The Big Number focused on the Knicks side of things with their recent struggles ever since the NBA Cup. I'm curious about the flip side of that. What are you seeing from Detroit this year, and especially as of late, with the way they've beaten, just destroyed the Knicks in that game? What stands out to you about the Pistons?
They got way more depth than I thought they did. You know, Dennis Jenkins has been an amazing two-way contract for them this season, stepping up in a big way, a lot like, you know, Caleb Love over in Portland, where it's like, oh, this guy, he's a fringe NBA player who's way better than that, way better. And then my favorite, most underrated player in the league, Beef Stew, Isaiah Stewart, like what he did to Nikola Vucevic in that game last night, it was a crime what he did to them. It was bully ball, Ben Wallace just wrecking them defensively. And just like Isaiah Stewart, I think, is just one of the great rim protectors in the NBA, defensive player of the year in waiting if he got starter minutes. But because of Jalen Duren, doesn't have that opportunity.
He at is least the best should be in the all defensive team conversation this year, Tom. At least should be.
14 for 17 field, and a lot of those is crazy. Just putting his shoulder into Vooch and Vooch just like not being able to do anything, right? It's not like he was just doing tip-ins and offensive rebound putbacks. It was like they were looking for Isaiah Stewart to get the ball at the top of the key and go Zion Williamson on him, like to drive, to put two dribbles, a power dribble, and go at the cup. And that was basically the offense for a while in this game, was getting Isaiah Stewart downhill in traffic because they just had no rim protection. And on the other end, he's allowing 42% shooting at the rim when he's nearby. His defensive field goal percentage in the rim is at 42% this season. Chet Holmgren, by comparison, who many think is the defensive player of the year this year, he's allowing 48% at the rim when he's nearby. Rudy Gobert, 50%. Victor Wembanyama, 53%. Those are the quote-unquote best rim protectors in the NBA. And Isaiah Stewart kills them in that category, allowing just 41.6% shooting when he's nearby at the rim. He's always willing to go vertical and defend at a high level. And not a lot of guys you can say that about in today's NBA, is that they're willing to put their body on the line and defend verticality and try to block you every single time you come down the lane. Isaiah Stewart is that dude. And oh, by the way, they got Jalen Duren, who's one of the best young bigs in the NBA and probably an all-star this season. This Detroit Pistons team, way deeper than I gave them credit for in the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, so far this year, Detroit top of the East, 28-9, 75.7 win percentage. They look like they're going to hold on to that as of now. But ultimately, I still think with this team, a little less than a month until the trade deadline, they are in a position where I do think they should be looking for reinforcements. And over on Threads, I asked people for their questions for the mailbag this week. And Nick asked, what is the ceiling for this Pistons team as currently constructed? And what moves, if any, do they need to make to be a title contender this year? Tom, do you think Detroit is in a situation here where they should sit on what they have, ride it out this year, and let the chips fall as they may? Or should they be aggressive with the Tobias Harris expiring, guys like a Jaden Ivey or even a Ron Holland, young players that they could try to flip and use them as assets? They have all of their future picks, so they could trade up to 4 firsts and 3 swaps if they wanted to. How are you looking at this deadline if you're the Detroit Pistons?
I think the time is now. I mean, you look at the Knicks and how they've sputtered, man. Like, I feel like the time is now for the Detroit Pistons. It's, you know, I do the title contenders, the title tiers every week, and the Pistons I've had as a 3-star title contender, not quite a 4-star, because I want to see them with a Michael Porter Jr. 3-point threat, big 3-point threat. And look, Isaiah Stewart's a guy that you can space out from time to time from the corner or at the top of the key. This is a guy that likes to shoot a few 3-pointers, and Jalen Duren, not that guy. Tobias Harris, solid vet at the 4, but if you sub in a Michael Porter Jr. in that slot, I'm willing to put them as a 4-star title contender. And like, I just think the title is going to come out of the Western Conference this year without OKC is playing, and then Houston and Denver, of course. But man, like, half the battle is just getting to the NBA Finals. And it feels like to me, this is the year that you pounce on a very weak at the top Eastern Conference. And this is the year I think you go and get go out and get a Michael Porter Jr., someone, a star caliber player that can help you take the lead.
I mean, I like that idea. I think as Scott said in the YouTube chat, how about MPJ to Detroit, Trey Murphy to Atlanta. I think, you know, something like that, those fits make sense for either of those teams. But the point is, I think with a lot of these teams in the NBA right now, whether it's a Trey Murphy or it's an MPJ for Detroit or vice versa for Atlanta or whoever the big man is for Boston, like I think it's open and these teams should be going for it. There's players out there who can really move the needle for you, especially Michael Porter Jr. Teams have to go for it right now in the current state of the NBA. It is open. There's an opportunity to win it. And I hope we see some big moves in the weeks ahead. Because as you said at the top, Tom, the Trae Young deal is kind of boring in a way, considering where he is in his game and considering the two teams involved. But I want to see some contenders make some big swings. I want to see some contenders make some trades that make me react in the way that Eric Collins does as a play-by-play announcer. Did you see his call at the end of the Hornets-Raptors game? Did you see that?
Pure electricity, man.
Can we listen to that clip? I need to hear it for my own ears. It's just insane. So like RJ Barrett hit a fadeaway jumper to tie the game. And then Eric Collins after that, just LaMelo hits a go ahead and he goes crazy.
Yeah, let's hear it.
That scream after quickly hits the game winner. Eric Collins, man, the enthusiasm, that dude is hilarious. He is so fun to listen to. I know a lot of people don't like him because of the screaming and the energy and all that. That's why I love him. You know, teach
his sports. This is not the Supreme Court. This is sports. It's supposed to be fun. He did a Panthers game earlier this year. Here,
listen to
the Carolina Panthers
85-year-old Al Michaels if you want Supreme Court style play calling. All due respect.
I know.
Al Michaels
it's
is a legend.
Fun.
But it's fun. You know, that it's just really enthusiastic. Bring energy.
I it is. It's why last night in the game, Tamani Kamara lost a tooth because he DFS kind of turned into him and he got split open his head and Tamani lost some teeth. And I did offensive rating with toothless player on the floor. And before I did it, I was like, I don't know. I feel like, you know, we're on a broadcast. Is this, and then my producer, Greg Fonseca, in my ear, just like, this is the funniest. We should be doing more of this and having more levity and making it fun on broadcast. This is not geopolitics. This is NBA basketball. Let's make it fun. So Eric Collins, when he gets like, he dials it up to 12 on a 10-point scale on excitement on both directions, by the way. Like it, sometimes yes. if a game winner happens, it's just like, oh man, we lost the game. That's a tough one. No, it's you want to feel something. And you can say that. You can say a lot of things about Eric Collins, but what you can't say is when you watch his games, you don't feel anything. You feel invested and engaged in the content that you're watching with the Hornets. And like to be honest, there's not been a lot to be excited for with the Charlotte Hornets in lately, but Eric Collins makes you locked in. And I love the excitement that he brings to the broadcast. And I want more people doing games like him.
Yeah, I'm with you, Tom. That's absolutely well said. It reminds me of kind of like how Max Kellerman, a producer for NBC Sports Boston, he always does these funny lower thirds involving players in the Celtics or the opponents. And it's just always funny. And like, I think little things like that are what make watching local broadcasts really fun. And each have their own character, just like you have with Portland. I mean, like, I think what they do with you with the Haberstadt is fun. It's different. It's unlike anything else. And it's always insightful. And like, it's a nice break from the flow. I think of that is very important for local teams.
We have a great time, Kevin, Lamar, Brooke, and I. We just like to like have a good time on the broadcast. And it reminds me of, I mean, you're a Red Sox fan. When I grew up, watching Don and Jerry just giggle during a Red Sox game was the best. That is what I think is like the pinnacle of broadcasting, is that every night you know that you're going to have a blast listening to these guys, and they like each other and the chemistry, and they rip each other and have jokes. And the pizza slice in the face clip that everyone loves, like that was what it's, that's what it's been like for us Red Sox fans growing up, because there was so much futility as being a Red Sox fan growing up, believe it or not. They were not always winning World Series, but that was, that's like the peak of what I think a great broadcast team is, making you have fun. And during an 82 game season and 162 games in the baseball season, there's going to be times and breaks for levity and laughing. And I think that's what we try to do with the Blazers broadcast. So thank you for shouting that out. We certainly try to. The other night we were trying to figure out, how does non-alcoholic beer work? And so during the broadcast in the end of the fourth quarter, we're just like, I'm looking up how to brew a non-alcoholic beer, because like Kevin Calabro and I were just like, what is the science on that? What's the
chemistry
on that?
Is it even beer? Is that even beer? Is it still beer if it's not alcoholic? That'd be my question. It seems like a
Best Day Brewing
category.
Shout out to Best Day Brewing for the Portland Trailblazers sponsor. We went on their website and they explained it, that they extract it by not having the fermentation temperature at a certain point. And it's just like, it's beyond me. I'm not a chemist. But what I can say is, when we're having fun on the broadcast, it's the same thing with writing, KOC. Kevin Arnovitz, my editor and pal over at ESPN for the longest time, he always said, if you're not having fun writing it, they're not going to have fun reading it. And I find the same way with broadcasting. If you're not having fun on the broadcast, or you're not having fun on this show right here, the audience is certainly not going to have fun. So it's a good message to people who have a front-facing job, or somewhere where you're presenting to people, is have fun, or feel like you're engaged in having fun while doing it. Because if you're having fun, chances are the audience will feel that. And that's what I think all these broadcasts, and Eric Collins too, I guarantee you, he has an absolute blast calling Charlotte Hornets games, or whatever it is. He has an absolute blast doing it. And Kevin Calabro, Lamar Herb, Brooke Olsendam, and I, that's what we strive to do every night. And that's why on this show, you know, we can laugh about Jaylen Brown's hairline from time
yes,
to time.
Exactly,
and how he
Tom.
Needs to come back. You know, come on.
Hopefully our live viewers are on YouTube. Hopefully at DJ Turnt is enjoying the show. He said in the comments, he said, stop this narrative that the Pistons need something else. They don't. We undefeated without Cade. We are good. I think that is possibly true, that you could reach the finals with what you got in Detroit. But ultimately, the Celtics are coming. The Knicks are going to be better than they were in that 31-point loss. And over on Threads, L asked a question about, if Jason Tatum comes back at 100%, do you think the Celtics will have what it takes to take down OKC or the Spurs? I think they would definitely have what it takes to take down a young team like the Spurs if they were to even make the finals. I'd make this question more about the Thunder or the Nuggets. Do you think Tatum coming back alone would be enough for Boston, Tom? Or do you think Boston would also need to make a trade to upgrade at the center spot or elsewhere on the roster?
There's a lot of ifs here. Like, if Jason Tatum comes back, and if he comes back at 100%.
Let's assume yeah. He comes back. Let's lower the threshold. When Tatum comes back at 85%.
I still think they need guys like Jrue Holiday and Kristaps Porzingis, two-way studs, two-way guys who can do both ends of the floor at a high level, and that's what you need on a championship team. And I just don't know if
Jrue Holiday and Kristaps Porzingis are not walking through that door.
No. But like, the Celtics are super fun, and I wrote for Tom, TomTheFinder.com, about like the possibility that Jaylen Brown has almost played so well that even if there was a Jaylen Brown for Giannis Antetokounmpo swap, I think the Celtics might say no to that because of how good Jaylen Brown has been and just the future of Giannis Antetokounmpo. Do you mess with the chemistry of Jason Tatum already winning a championship? Jason Tatum coming back, we don't know what kind of, you know, shape he's going to be in coming back. And those variables, I think, are really interesting for the Boston Celtics. So this hypothetical, if he comes back at 100%, do they have enough up front, right? Like, do they have enough in the front court to be able to hang with OKC, Chet Holmgren, Isaiah Hartenstein, and J-Dub, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander coming down? And of course, Denver with Nikola Jokic and the Houston Rockets. I just don't think they have enough muscle up front to contend with those guys. What about you?
I think they need another big. They need some more muscle. And the guy who always comes to mind is Ivica Zubats. DJ May in the live YouTube chat mentioned, what did the Clippers do? Sell high on their stars or trade Zubats for picks? And what did the Clippers do? And I think Zubats is the guy that I'm targeting if I'm the Celtics. Give up Anfernee Simons, move below the luxury tax, get Zubats, and that adds some of the muscle that you're talking about, Tom. I think that's what I'm angling to do if I'm Boston. But ultimately, like for Pistons fans who think just go with what you got, ultimately, that's my perspective for all of these Eastern Conference teams. They should be looking for ways to get better and bolster their chances to A, get to the NBA Finals, and B, win the whole damn thing, which is the point when you actually get there. Like, you still might need to improve the team to get through Oklahoma City or get through the Denver Nuggets or whoever the representative is in the superior Western Conference. There's no reason to be complacent if you're any of these teams right now in the NBA when there's guys out there that they aren't necessarily the hardest fits in the world. Like, I think, you know, Giannis, the biggest prize out there is a hard fit midseason, but a Michael Porter Jr. or a Trey Murphy and a Ivica Zubats, these guys you can slide in February, and I don't think it's a big adjustment mid-year. And so that's where I kind of am at, Tom, with the Celtics, the Pistons, a lot of these teams. I hope the Trae Young that from Atlanta to Washington deal is the first of many exciting trades this month as we're watching some great basketball on the floor. And Tom, thank you so much for joining me for this YouTube Live edition of the Kevin O'Connell Show. Thank you, man.
You got it, man. I can't wait. If this is the deal before the deal, we'll be talking next week about something monstrous. So I think right now, that is my take, is that this is the deal before the deal, because right now, as currently constructed, I just can't get excited about either side. But we'll see what Atlanta does here with the new front office and I think ambitions to really go after an open race in the East.
I'm with you there, Tom. The deal before the deal. Thank you so much for joining me, Tom. Thank you for everybody watching us live on YouTube. Be sure to subscribe to Yahoo NBA. That's where you can get the video version of my podcast, the video version of Tom's show, The Big Number, as well as the Dunker Spot and some breakdown videos we get coming in the weeks and months ahead as well. Big thank you to Emmy and the team for producing today's show, especially a big thanks to Dakota, who is leaving us this week. This is his last show. Thank you, Dakota, for all the hard work. Thank you to Father John Misty for the music. Thanks to you for giving us a watch and a listen. Have a good rest of your day. We'll be back again on Monday.